Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, April is Invasive Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month, and Jay Fox will have a conversation with someone from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Jay will also speak with an expert about parental controls to ensure children stay safe while gaming online, and we'll hear more about Take a Child to Work Day. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective,
the U.S. Department of Agriculture has declared April 2025 Invasive Plant, Pest, and Disease Awareness Month, emphasizing the urgent threat of invasive pests and what Central Ohioans can do to stop their spread. Invasive plant pests and diseases cost the U.S. an estimated $40 billion annually in damages. And get this, gang, many of these pests spread through human activity. USDA agriculturist Catherine Bronski joins us now on Columbus Perspective to talk about what we can do to take action here in Central Ohio. Catherine, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me on your show today to talk about Invasive Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month and why it matters for Ohioans.
Well, that's the first question I want to ask is, what are the invasive plant pests and why is this such a big deal?
Invasive plant pests and diseases cause damage to crops, agriculture, and forestries. They are invasive insects and have diseases as well, and they have few or no natural predators in their new environment and can quickly spread to outcompete native species, which really hurts our local ecosystems and our farmers. Some examples of these hungry pests are spotted lanternfly, Asian longhorn beetle, spongy moth, and box tree moths, and they are great natural hitchhikers. It's really easy for people to accidentally move them to new areas on outdoor equipment or vehicles, firewood, even your online purchases from overseas.
So why is the month of April so important in particular? Is that because this is the time for plant genesis and growth?
Yeah, that's right. April is Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month because it's when plants start coming out, their leaves are coming out, and it's actually a really good time for people to get outdoors and spot signs of damaging invasive species and plant diseases. You can be in your garden. Maybe you're enjoying the weather a little bit more outside, getting out into your community and your neighborhood. And while you're doing that, we encourage everyone to look for signs of these damaging invasive species and plant diseases or hungry pests. And it's just like you love to get outdoors more during the spring and the nicer weather, so do these hungry pests. And now is the time to spot them. You can look for them as egg masses even before they emerge and help to destroy them and prevent them from spreading. Or you may be able to see holes in trees and other types of damage before the leaves fully spread out.
Now, I remember growing up as a child in Shaker Heights, Ohio, and we had some of the most beautiful Dutch elm trees I've ever seen. However, they were almost all wiped out by something called Dutch elm disease. Is that part of what we're talking about with these pests? Can an entire crop go away?
Exactly right. Yeah, that's an example, a good example of a damaging hungry pest, a disease. And that's what we're on the lookout for. USDA tries to prevent their spread and from getting into the country, but we really need everybody's help to be on the lookout for it because they can easily spread by people. So, for example, Asian longhorn beetle is a hardwood borer. It's a beetle that attacks hardwood trees, and it can be spread on accident by people moving wood just from their own backyard. You may be going to a neighbor's bonfire or camping trip and just take wood from your own yard to bring and burn at a different location. Well, unfortunately, those Asian longhorn beetles could emerge from that firewood and spread to a whole new area and cause a whole new quarantine or just damage in forest areas that wasn't previously there.
So we don't want to cry wolf. How do we know when it's time to report something? For example, sometimes leaves on a tree can be damaged either by birds or squirrels or even wind. When do we call that in?
If you see anything that looks suspicious, like there's a new insect or disease in your area, then you can report it. Go to hungrypests.com. We have some great pictures that shows you information about what these pests are, what they look like, and a good place of where to report it to your local agricultural official. And some state departments of agriculture, so Ohio Department of Agriculture, also has information on their website about their local quarantines. And this is really important because it may be you're in an area that is under quarantine and you can't move certain articles outside of that area. And also, you may be in an area that's outside of those quarantines and want to be on the lookout for those and report it. So hungrypests.com is a great resource to use both to find out examples and pictures and also what to do, where to report it.
Catherine Bronski has joined us from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and we thank her for her time. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
The city of Columbus is considered one of the top cities in the country for gamers, and online gaming continues to rise in popularity, especially among children. While it can be fun and maybe even educational, it's become a source of stress for Central Ohio parents who are very concerned about the content their kids can access, who they're messaging, and whether they're spending too much time online. Eliza Jacobs is a senior director of product policy at Roblox, and she joins us now on Columbus Perspective to discuss what can be done. Welcome, Eliza.
Thank you so much for having me.
How can parents talk to their kids about the importance of online safety without seeming like a downer?
Sure, I totally understand it as a parent myself. I know the eye rolls.
Yep.
I think first of all, you got to start with talking to your kids about why they love Roblox and why they love gaming. And maybe get in the game yourself. Open an account, play around, find something you can play with your kids so that your kid really believes that you care about their gaming life and you believe them when they tell you why they love it. And then you can open up the line of communication to start talking about online safety and whether that's who they're talking to or what they're playing. It's really important to keep that line of communication open so that if your kids encounter something that makes them feel uncomfortable, they'll come to you and tell you, and you can work on it together.
The world of online gaming is more than just gaming. It's become a social network. There are people who are not only gaming with other people, but their games are being recorded or in some cases watched live. What are the latest updates that Roblox has implemented, and how will they assure parents that this is a safer place to be?
So we launched a new set of parental controls in the fall, and we're updating those controls with even more fine-grained controls for parents, more ability to decide on their kids' experience on Roblox. So the big three updates are, first of all, parents can block individual friends from their kids' friends list on the platform, so they won't be able to communicate with those individuals. They can block individual experiences. So if there are specific games that they don't want their kids playing, they can go in and block those. And also they'll have visibility into per experience screen time. So they'll be able to see what their kids are playing the most. And, you know, that'll also open up a line of communication about their kids' online experience. And we're hopeful that these controls will give parents just even more peace of mind about what their kids are doing on the platform.
Now, this is an ever-evolving technology and industry, so how often do you have to make safety updates?
Yeah, you know, we'll make them as often as is necessary to make sure our community and platform stay safe and civil. We're constantly in communication with parents and doing research and understanding what they want and what they need on the platform, and we'll just keep rolling stuff out to serve our community.
When we talk about spending too much time online, how much time is too much?
Yeah, you know, I think that's such a personal question. Every family is different. Every kid is different. Every platform is different. You know, there might be some platforms that are really good for your kids and others that you find just don't work for your family. And so that's why we're rolling out these controls to make it much easier for parents to be able to set these limits once and then have them go about their day and know that their kids are engaging with the platform in the way that they want them to.
some parents are more vigilant than others. And we've heard in Columbus some parents saying, we want our kids outside. We want them engaging face to face. You know, we want them to have the life that we had when we were children, or, you know, when our parents were children. How does Roblox kind of allude to that lifestyle on screen?
Yeah, I think, you know, we want kids to have a diversity of experiences in their lives, and Roblox is a part of that. So whether that's building games and learning coding skills, or whether that's like going to a concert on the platform, or a fashion show, or a race show, you know, there might be a thing that doesn't come to Columbus that you might be able to see on Roblox or something like that. So whether that's connecting with friends that live far away, or, you know, think back to sort of pen pals of earlier eras, I think there's opportunity for lots of stuff on Roblox. It really opens up the world, and kids should be doing all the stuff that you mentioned, but we think Roblox is a part of it as well.
If parents are listening today and they need additional resources to make them feel safe and make them feel good about what they're doing for their kids, where do you send them?
Yeah, they can go to roblox.com/safety, and there's lots of resources there about our parental controls and how to manage things on our platform, but also more broadly about digital media literacy, because we really want kids to be safe and civil, not just on Roblox, but everywhere on the internet. And so we want to help parents and educate them about tools they can use everywhere.
Fantastic. Eliza Jacobs is the Senior Director of Product Policy at Roblox, and we thank you for being with us. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
Take a Child to Work Day and Beyond is April 24th. Thousands of kids across Central Ohio will visit workplaces to gain firsthand knowledge of what it's like to have a job and work with others. Junior Achievement and their corporate partners lead Take a Child to Work Day and Beyond, and they've expanded the program to give kids who can't visit a parent's workplace for one reason or another the flexibility to experience a visit at other times throughout the year. Gina Gibbs Foster is the Vice President of Corporate Communications at Staples, one of the corporate sponsors of Junior Achievement and this program, and she joins us now on Columbus Perspective. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I remember going to work with my dad back in the 70s in Cleveland at Erie View Plaza. How long has this program been in existence?
Well, that's a great question. This program has been in existence in some form since the early 1990s. Some people may remember it as Take Your Daughter to Work Day, which started then. And since then, it has evolved to include all children. So today, even those who might not have a parent who can take them to work are able to go in with a guardian, with a volunteer professional, like many of our associates in Staples, and have that same type of experience that you had with your dad. I had with my dad at Dayton, Ohio, back in the day, and it really is an opportunity for everyone to experience the world of work up close. And this year, it is sponsored and brought to us by Junior Achievement, which is leading the initiative, and Staples is happy to be a proud sponsor.
So why is it so important for young people to have this experience?
It's really important for young people to have this experience because we know that kids really look into career paths and jobs based on what they see. And that's why so many young people, including my own children, at some time will say, hey, I want to grow up and be a social media influencer, because that's what they see when they're on TikTok or they're online. But we know that social media influencing is not for everyone. And there are lots of other jobs and viable career paths out there that can help to create a solid financial foundation for them in the future. So, for example, if a child is very interested in social media influencing or social media in general, they might want to look into a career in something like digital marketing or marketing in general. Maybe they like the tech side of social media. They might consider computer science, IT, cybersecurity. Those are all viable, lucrative career paths that can use the same skills and interests and propel those children into a career path that they might not have thought of that is needed in today's workplace.
I love the fact that the program has expanded to include kids that can't visit. And that could be for a variety of reasons. Either their parents can't take them, or maybe they don't have parents. They're living with their grandparents. Whatever the reason why, that particular change is essential. How does that work? Who is it responsible for those kids in their unique circumstances?
Well, there's a couple of ways that kids in those unique circumstances can still participate. What will happen on Take a Child to Work Day on Beyond, and Beyond on April 24th, is that young people across the country will be going into workplaces to shadow parents, guardians, even volunteer professionals, and they'll get a chance to see up close what their jobs look like, what they do on a day-to-day basis, and how that may connect with the children's own skills and interests. And from that, the children can get a much bigger perspective of, you know, what do adults do when they go to work day every day, and how can they connect that with what they're learning every day in school. And then for volunteers, whether, again, it's a parent or a guardian or a company volunteer, those volunteers get an opportunity to reconnect with what inspired them about their career path and the jobs they're in. So it's a really nice win-win for everyone involved, and it doesn't have to be a direct parent. The other opportunity that's available now through Take a Child to Work Day and Beyond is if somebody's not available to go visit a workplace on April 24th, say the child is sick that day, or they have an important exam that they need to complete, or any other number of reasons. Now through Junior Achievement, students can still get the same experience through other means on other days. So on the Take a Child to Work Day website, which can be found by searching for Take a Child to Work Day and Junior Achievement, there are a lot of tools and guidelines and resources available so that parents or guardians can bring that same experience to their children throughout the year. There are opportunities to create that same experience in the workplace. Businesses can go in and see how to create that experience on any day of the year. And other interested volunteers can find ways to volunteer and mentor, even sometimes in the classroom. So I really encourage everyone to take a look at that Take a Child to Work Day website, or visit the Junior Achievement website at ja.org to look for opportunities to get involved, mentor, and create those connections between students and the world of work any time of the year.
I think that's fantastic. We want to thank Gina Gibbs Foster from Staples for being with us on behalf of Junior Achievement, telling us a little bit about this new program, Take a Child to Work Day and Beyond. It's April 24th, but it could be any time. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
Early voting for the May 6th primary and special election is now underway across Ohio. Voters will be deciding who they want on their city councils, whether they support a wide variety of bonds and levies, including for police and fire departments and schools, and one statewide ballot issue. Issue two is all about infrastructure. Voters are being asked to reauthorize the State Capital Improvement Program. On the ballot, it's a constitutional amendment asking voters to approve $2.5 billion over 10 years. If approved, it would authorize the state to issue $250 million worth of bonds per year for projects involving roads and bridges, water treatment, storm system, and solid waste disposal. It's actually been in place since 1987, and voters have then renewed it three times. The State Capital Improvement Program also has broad bipartisan support at the State House. Joining me now to talk about how this works is Democratic State Senator Herschel Craig of Columbus. He co-sponsored the legislation along with Republican Senator Brian Chavez. Senator, thank you for being here as always.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Doug. Always good to be with you.
Thank you, and I appreciate your time. I gave an overview there, but in your words, can you explain to our viewers what the State Capital Improvement Program is?
And I appreciate so much, much of the things that you talked about. This is a critical program, as you've already indicated. It's been reapproved three times. What it will do, you know, for our roads, bridges, all of the critical infrastructure needs around fresh water, our solid waste disposal facilities, all of those things are critical to the development of our state. And it is critical for us. I think that's $250 million over a 10-year period for $2.5 million.
Yeah. And these aren't state projects, right? These are projects that local municipalities would do and apply for.
Yeah, absolutely. There are low interest loans and grants to ensure that our local government and municipalities have the critical resources that they need.
Okay.
For infrastructure needs.
Yeah, and you know, we see that need, and this has been around, as you mentioned, since 1987. So, you know, over that course of, you know, the 40 years basically that this has been in place, you know, how much work has been done through this program? Is it, and it's all across the state?
Well, it's all across the state, and I would suggest to you that there's been critical work done. And as you see, even in the in central Ohio, as much work that is being done, but in our rural areas and suburban areas. So all around the state, these are critical projects that helps our state, our families and our children, our workforce be able to move back and forth to work to make sure that that happens timely and effectively.
Now, I know you've worked a lot on affordable housing projects, and this is not part of that. So, you know, when you look at the growth that Central Ohio is experiencing with population moving in, we're still expecting another 750,000 people over a decade or so. When you look at this program, how critical of a part of keeping up with that growth is SCIP, this program?
Well, SCIP is absolutely vital. I know that, you know, many of our communities, Central Ohio, certainly, you know, all of government, it's you know, not infinite. So they have to, you know, in terms of their raising monies and making sure that they have the resources essential for the residents. What SCIP does is provide another critical level of support for these communities. You've already indicated Central Ohio will grow exponentially in the next 20 years or so. And so those are real issues and real opportunities for our families and children. But we have to be able to do it. It certainly requires resources in order to do that.
You know, there's a House and Senate version of this legislation to get it on the May ballot as a constitutional amendment, as I mentioned. And it has bipartisan support, but how broad is that support?
It is broad. It passed out of the Senate in our caucus and in the Senate unanimously. In the House, it has broad support because we recognize that certainly it's an urban issue, a suburban issue, and a rural issue. And all of our communities around the state of Ohio, this is critical infrastructure concerns and needs.
Now, $2.5 billion is a lot of money. I know it's spread over 10 years, but, you know, if people are watching and they're saying, well, how's that going to affect my taxes if I vote yes to continue this program a fourth time?
Right.
You know, how will it affect people's taxes if it's approved?
Well, thank you for raising that question. The good news is it does not raise taxes. That's why, you know, these are bonds that you know, we amend the current provisions of the Ohio Constitution to allow for the state to do these general obligation bonds. And so I think for the public's concern, it's always whenever we're looking something on the ballot like this, we need to be very clear provide good information to the public that this does not raise their taxes, but it provides critical support for our communities all over the state of Ohio.
So it would basically be a continuation of the current bond that their voters are already
absolutely
paying for.
Okay. Absolutely.
Well, Senator, I do want to get your thoughts on another topic that was
sure.
A major topic that came out of the state legislature this week, and that is, as you know, the Ohio House passed its state operating budget on Wednesday by a vote of 60-39. The two-year $61 billion state spending plan includes roughly $20 billion for public schools and just under $1 billion for libraries. Budget bill sponsor Representative Brian Stewart says the proposed budget will give public schools $550 million more than the last 2 years. He says it will also provide swift property tax relief. Here's how. A new provision would require school districts to give money back to homeowners if the district carries over more than 30% of its operating revenue to the next fiscal year. This is a big point of disagreement between Republicans and Democrats.
What are we doing for property tax relief? So we've been able to fund the schools, but also say for the schools who are getting so much money that they can't spend it, either for property taxes or extra money from the state, we've got this property tax relief built in.
And we know just from the initial feedback from our school districts that it is extremely damaging and will actually cause districts to have to go back to voters for levies when we are already in a state that has more levies than any other state in the country more often.
Now, as for public libraries, the House reversed proposed cuts and is now providing more funding for libraries. But it changed the way libraries get money, from a percentage of state revenue to a line item in the budget. Here's how funding compares year over year on your screen. In 2024, libraries received $489 million state dollars. The House is proposing $490 million for the next fiscal year and then $500 million for the following year. Representative Stewart also said lawmakers removed every proposed tax increase from the budget in the House. The bill now goes to the Senate for its consideration, and the Senate can make changes to it. And we do have Senator Herschel Craig here. So, Senator, what are your thoughts right now coming out of what you've seen the House pass this past Wednesday?
Well, Doug, I appreciate so much our conversation regarding it. Clearly, there are things that and areas that I can agree with, or we could agree with in my caucus and other members. But there are things that we have great concerns about. This issue around public education, and in many ways, it's my belief that we have abandoned the fair school of funding planned. We need to make sure that we're adequately and equitably funding our schools. And it's my position that we're not doing that. The other thing is around our public libraries. I had numerous calls and met with folks from our public libraries, and the way that we have changed the funding mechanism deeply concerns me. This whole issue around Medicaid, and we know what the federal government is doing. We've read about it. We've heard about it. But in the state of Ohio, that 700,000 residents are at risk with regard to Medicaid.
If the cuts are put in place.
This other issue is around property taxes. As you know, I had a bill around circuit breakers that we had proposed to the Senate. That would have both long-term and short-term and long-term implications for our seniors and our families and our workforce. And so while there are things that I can support with the increase in the child care provisions in the bill and the welcome home provisions, I have very clear and very deep concerns about many of the other issues.
The governor had proposed a $1,000 child tax credit to be paid for by increased taxes on tobacco products. That was taken out. As
yes.
I mentioned, there are no tax increases in this bill. Would you have supported that in terms of how to pay for the child tax credit, or would you seek a different mechanism for that?
Well, you know, I think on that provision, I think this is something that we could have gotten behind. With the governor, that issue around tobacco and with our children is always raises real serious concerns and how it gets there. So I think that's something that we could certainly have, you know, we looked at very seriously.
Now, the Republicans do have a supermajority. So do you feel that Democrats will have much say in what ends up coming out of the Senate discussions on the budget when there are, you know, 9 of you to 24 Republicans?
Listen, Doug, we have work to do. We know that. I think our caucus is they're preparing and for the work that we need to be engaged in that. Because fundamentally, you know, we have an obligation to make sure that this document is fair and is equitable for all Ohioans. That's my position. I know that that's the position of my caucus and those that are in the Senate. And we're going to do our due diligence to make sure that there's fairness in this budget.
Senator Herschel Craig represents Columbus. Thank you so much for your time. I always appreciate talking to you, sir.
Well, thank you so much, Doug. It's always good to be with you.
Have a good rest of your day.
Thank you so much.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
The president's tariffs are still dominating national news and impacting the global economy. On Wednesday, President Trump announced a 90-day pause on his reciprocal tariffs for all countries except for China. The changes have led to dramatic up-and-down swings in the stock market. The president hiked tariffs on Chinese imports to 145%. Then, Beijing raised its retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. The White House says President Trump's decision is not influenced by the stock market's volatility, but rather it's all a strategy to negotiate new trade agreements.
We have just been overwhelmed by the response from mostly our allies who want to come and negotiate in good faith.
It's unclear what will happen after the 90-day period ends while countries negotiate with the Trump administration. Ohio Republican Senator Bernie Moreno says implementing the tariffs is long overdue and the U.S. is in good shape.
The president is doing what should have been done decades ago, which is making certain that we have fair and reciprocal trades between our countries, including our allies, where we haven't been treated fairly. China has obviously stolen our intellectual property. They've forced our companies to go there and do business with their companies. They erected massive tariffs up to 100% on our goods, and yet we let them have complete free reign of the United States. What's been the result is our industrial base, our manufacturing sector has been wiped out. You can't have American workers that should be paid a living wage, a wage that allows them to provide for a family, compete with slave labor in China. That just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
I also reached out to members of the U.S. House who represent Central Ohio. 12th District Congressman Troy Balderson sent a statement saying, President Trump has taken decisive action to protect American workers and has successfully brought other countries to the negotiating table in less than a week. Under the president's bold leadership, we will reshore critical supply chains and bring high-paying manufacturing jobs to Ohio. Democratic Representative Joyce Beatty calls the tariffs reckless, saying in part, tariffs are outright taxes on working Ohioans. By driving up the cost of essential goods, these tariffs will cost the average American family $2,000 per year, further straining their ability to put food on the table, purchase a car, or heat their homes. Earlier last week, Governor Mike DeWine said the jury is still out on whether the president's tariffs will put America in a better position. The governor says he hopes the tariffs have the desired effect and help the U.S. and Ohio. Meantime, the tariffs are already impacting Central Ohio companies. The president of the Wasserstrom Company told me they are seeing a lot of price increases coming from their suppliers.
Wasserstrom Company President Brad Wasserstrom says his 120-year-old Columbus-based family-run food service and supply business gets products from dozens of countries, with China, Mexico, and Canada being the main three. Besides price increases, he says the company is seeing orders get postponed or canceled based on pending changes.
Talking to our suppliers and our customers on what it means, and we're scrambling to find out as quickly as possible, country by country, material by material. It's just a lot to get your arms around in a very short period of time.
Wasserstrom's products include everything from ovens to forks and spoons for restaurants across the country. Wasserstrom says if the tariffs stay in place, the company won't be able to absorb the extra costs and would have to pass them on to their customers.
So we're negotiating with suppliers when we can, if there's any flexibility in what they're passing on to us. Some have been able to do something to help us out. They're not passing through maybe the full tariff.
President Trump has said tariffs will help bring manufacturing jobs back to the U.S. and improve America's trade position around the world. Monday morning, Governor DeWine said this.
You know, these are the president's decisions. He's made these decisions. We can only hope that, this does in fact work and puts the United States in a better position. But the jury is still out. We do not have a verdict on that, certainly.
Wasserstrom says bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. will take a long time.
I do understand why. I understand the we have not been treated fairly, but the notion of we're going to put in a tariff and in very short term, all this industry is going to come racing back. I don't see it.
And Wasserstrom is staying positive, saying his family's company got through the Great Depression and survived COVID and will get through this too.
I've been driving trucks for a long time. Safety is my number one priority. I know that my truck has huge blind spots. That's why I remember to check my mirrors often for smaller vehicles. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're behind the wheel, try to avoid lingering in those blind spots. It can be dangerous. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Parenting is hard. Technology can make it harder. The Family Media Plan developed by the American Academy of Pediatrics helps make it easier. Go to healthychildren.org/media plan to create the media plan that's right for your family. Whether you make a full plan or just choose a few parts that matter the most to your family, healthychildren.org/media plan is an easy-to-use tool that will help your family set media priorities and create healthy digital habits in line with your family's values. You'll also get practical tips to help make the plan work. And you can come back to revise your plan as often as you need to, like at the beginning of each school year or during summer and holiday breaks. Raising kids in the age of screens is easier when you have a plan. Go to healthychildren.org/media plan and make your plan today.
A new law went into effect in Ohio on Wednesday that's all about protecting people, mainly children, online. Braden's Law makes sextortion a felony. The law is named after 15-year-old Braden Marcus. The Olentangy High School student took his own life just 27 minutes after falling victim to a sextortion scam through social media. Sextortion is when a scammer coerces someone into sending explicit images online, then blackmails the victim by threatening to release the images. In recent years, the FBI has seen a huge increase in sextortion involving kids and teenagers. Braden's Law increases penalties against sextortion scammers. It also orders companies to give parents digital access within 30 days of their child's death. We talked to an expert about three ways to know if you or your child is getting baited on social media. What are the red flags? The Franklin County Sheriff's Office says the first red flag is when the scammer asks to keep the conversation a secret. They'll also offer money or gift cards in exchange for photos. And the scammer will send explicit content of themselves first to lower the child's guard and make them feel less threatened. 10TV's Angela Ann has spoken with Braden's family many times over the years covering the story. His mom wants all parents to know they have to be more aware of who their kids are talking to online. So we went to the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force to find out how to do that. They say the first and really most important thing you can do is build trust so your child knows who to turn to if things go south.
So as a parent, you know, people say monitor your child's social media. Then the kid says, don't spy on me. Like, what should I do as a parent?
I have a son who just turned 14 myself, so that's not lost on me. Apps today are built for privacy. Things like disappearing messages, disappearing pictures and videos, as I've mentioned before, they're common and they're enticing to teenagers who have a newfound desire for privacy. So parental monitoring is absolutely important, if for no other reason than it keeps the kids on edge about what they're doing might be discovered by their parents.
Franklin County Sheriff Sergeant Joe Smith says the Internet Crimes Against Children team gets reports multiple times a week involving kids just in Franklin County alone. While we've heard of apps like Instagram, Snap, and Discord, the sergeant says parents really need to understand that any app with direct messaging can be dangerous. We have more safety tips online under this story on 10TV.com. Just search Braden's Law. Another new state law went into effect Wednesday, also named after an Ohioan who lost their life way too young. Liv's Law cracks down on drunk driving in Ohio. It's named for 22-year-old Liv Wright, an Asheville woman killed by a drunk driver in 2020. Since her death, her parents have made it their mission to push for stricter laws targeting repeat offenders. 10TV's Carla Rogner shares how they hope this legislation will save lives.
The sunflower was her favorite flower. She was one of the greatest people I know.
At 22, Liv Wright was ready to take on the world with her kind smile and her big heart.
She was probably the most humble person I knew, and I'm kind of biased because I'm her mom, but she really was.
On a September morning in 2020, Liv was minutes away from home on State Route 104 when a drunk driver dimmed her bright light. According to court records, the driver had a BAC nearly three times the legal limit.
I was so overwhelmed by the sense of responsibility to get justice for my daughter.
When a judge sentenced the driver to 5 years in jail, Liv's parents, Teresa and Brian, quickly turned anger into action.
There's a lot of things we could have done in memory of Liv, but to save lives would have been probably the most prominent thing for her.
Now the newest addition to the memorial to Liv in their living room are these pens used by Governor DeWine to sign House Bill 37 into law, known as Liv's Law. It tightens up many of Ohio's drunk driving laws, including increasing minimum sentences, increasing fines, and requires more repeat offenders to install breathalyzers in their cars.
It absolutely sends the message that Ohio is going to hold you accountable.
It won't change anything in Liv's case. The driver will get out of jail next year, but her family hopes Liv's story and these stricter laws will change people's minds before they get behind the wheel.
I lost my daughter. I lost my daughter to a drunk driver, and he only got 5 years. But to save lives, I felt like she would be very proud. She believed in justice.
Do you feel like you've gotten justice?
Absolutely.
Reporting in Columbus, Carla Rogner, 10 TV News.
That is all of our time for today. Thank you for joining me this week for Face the State.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV. From the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.